Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Daniel Quick.
Makalua.
Imran Siddiqui.
Cardamandua.
With guest co-hosts...
Petrox.
The DS.
Me and Team.
What was that? That sounded like a kiss.
No, that's me being bad and chewing on my nails, sorry.
Oh.
No.
Bad habit.
Nom, 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 nom.
You have a very sensitive microphone to pick up nail chewing.
I wish mine worked that way.
That just totally killed the mood, thanks.
It's episode 72. I know you think it's 71, but it's really 72. Because that's what I want it to be. 72 is the year I was born. So that's why it has to be 72.
Just a couple more episodes till we get to my episode.
So I'm the old man, huh?
Only by a couple of years.
My name is Jim. You know me as the DS. I'm here with a bunch of people to do episode number 71. I'd like to say hello to Daniel Quick, our host.
Do you hate the PlayStation Portable, or what's your relation with that product right now?
They stole my name. I've had this name for 10 years now.
Issues.
Their issues, not mine. Next up, we have Malakua. Let me try that in English, or Hawaiian, or whatever language it's supposed to be. Makalua.
Who left her coffee in the other room. Be right back.
And she's a girl, in case y'all didn't notice. Next, we have Petrox.
Hi.
That was inspiring. Have you got any more words of wisdom for us?
I'm just going to say that I'm pretty shy, and I'm so glad I'm not doing this.
We know who's doing the closing. Thanks for making that decision for me right now.
And last but not least is the me and team, also known as Philip.
Hello, everyone. I'm a peaceful builder only, I swear.
That's not a stack of doom you see on your border.
Those nukes are for show.
Don't worry, mispronouncing Max's username is a Polycast tradition.
Tradition. It really is at this point.
Well, you can edit that, I'm sure.
No, I'll leave it the way it is. It's fun. It's actually kind of gotten boring because people have been pronouncing it right lately.
I could edit that out, but it'll depend whether or not you respond to my invoice, so.
Invoice? Oh. You're supposed to be paying me.
Wait, we're not the ones being paid for this one. Ah, crap.
I'm the famous one.
You got to read the fine print, guys. That's why I'm still here.
There was no print at all. That's the problem.
Oh, you all wanted to be infamous, and now you are.
Yay! But the main team's already infamous.
Oh.
True?
That's true.
Come on, I only have like 8,000 posts in 1 year. There's no way I can be.
You know, I get a little prideful sometimes that I've got like 1,000 posts and I hardly ever stop by and I've got 1,000 posts and then you come along and say, I've got 8,000 and that's just in the first 10 minutes I was here. That just kind of humbles me.
This stuff's kind of called spam, I think.
So welcome everybody and let us begin.
It's been a long time. I actually can't remember the last time the two regular co-hosts weren't here. So Mackie is grateful that all three of you showed up, because then she'd just be talking to me, and that scares her. I understand.
Well, I don't know why that would scare her. You sound like a nice guy.
Someone that hangs around you a lot, she sure doesn't like you. We talked about Beyond the Sword 3.19 patch being released, and we also talked about Arcsid Resurrected, 2 editions in 2 months.
In the interview, we spoke with the main team about his video series, Let's Play Civilization. Adam, which segment would you like us to start with?
Let's see. Let's have a look.
Ah, so your real name is Imran. Okay.
Oh, what?
You said you have to take a look at the...
Yeah, reference to the fact that Imran is never prepared.
Oh, no, I have no idea what you're talking about.
You should listen to the show!
Oh, sorry.
Oh. Here's what's been making news in the Civ community.
Solid 3.19 patch being released.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I've seen a lot of people griping about it because they just fixed all their mods and stuff, and now they have to fix them again.
Yeah.
And that even happened to me. I just put out a spreadsheet, the reference sheet from hell. I go and release that, and then, like, not even a week later, they got this patch, and now I got to change one line somewhere. So I'm totally miffed. I'm just kidding. I'm not really miffed. Just saying.
I'm sure the impact of the patch and what it is doing to already released mods and mods in development will be discussed on an upcoming episode of ModCast. But worth mentioning here, from what I've seen, that's actually the most general gripe I've seen.
It would be.
And people actually not just talking about, is it broken or not, but some people saying, oh, it is broken. How do I roll back to 3.17?
Well, I guess I'm not much of a mod person. I mean, I've played a few. I understand a lot of people do play them. I mean, be it not safe, it's not an issue. But personally speaking, it doesn't bother me too much.
One of the things that really jumped out to me in 3.19, and this is more from the strategy tips subform as opposed to general discussion, but one of the things you'll notice is that they removed the overflow into gold. Now, the tip here says that they removed the building-specific bonuses, so expansive doesn't get their 100% bonus to their chops into a granary to go to the gold overflow anymore. But they essentially removed overflow entirely and reintroduced some micromanagement. So from that aspect, that was one of the bigger changes, because a lot of the advanced players, if they were expansive or creative or especially protective, they would start production of those things and then time out like three workers chopping into the city that exact turn, and then whip that same turn too. And they would just, you get hundreds of gold in overflow from that, and it could speed your early game research a lot. So that was one of the largest changes that came about from 3.19, as they took that back away from us. I actually think that helps.
To me, that sounds like micromanagement, because I simply can't devote the brain power, call me stupid if you want to, but I can't devote the brain power to get 50 different chops happening all at the same time at a specific time. You know, I don't want to waste the worker turns by moving them from one place to another place to another place just to get chops coming at just the right time. So it seems to me like that may have actually reduced the micromanagement a little bit.
Well, the problem, though, is that when you're building certain units like warriors or whatever, you have to be really careful about finishing chops during that. Like, you have to pay attention carefully, or else you're going to lose hammers from your chops or even your whips. Whereas before, like, if you chose to take advantage of the overflow, you could do it, but if you didn't want to do that, it wasn't going to hurt you by not micromanaging. You just wouldn't get the gold, but it wouldn't be a huge deal. Whereas now, like, anybody who doesn't want to lose hammers has to pay attention. That doesn't bother me too much, because there's only a couple units you have to pay attention to. The biggest one in early game is warriors, of course. And if you're chopping when you're building a granary or something, it's expansive. But for the most part, it doesn't add too much micro, but even so.
Yeah, well, at the same time, it's just got to be what you enjoy. Getting those chops out, micromanaging all that is fun for you, then by all means. But if it's not fun, there's not much point. For me, and for what I always tell others, you've just got to find what's fun for you.
Right.
We're all here, right?
Yeah. I mean, I knew about those things, about the warp, protective wall and getting all that gold. I knew about it, but I just didn't care to use it. So that doesn't really, personally speaking, it doesn't bother me a great deal.
Yeah, that's past my desired level of micromanaging in the game.
Speaking of micromanagement, also from the change log, fix cheat where you could apply a free tech from one game to another. I thank Rolo1 for explaining this, because I read that and I went, what are you talking about? And I feel better not being the only one in the dark on that.
Yep, I was.
Previous versions of Beyond the Sword that allow you to reload the autosave of the turn you got Oracle or Liberalism after you chose the technology, and the technology would appear as researched after the reload. With enough patience for reloads, you could get the entire technology tree.
Oh, talk about cheating. Damn.
Yeah, at some point, what's the point?
Exactly.
Why not just go into the world builder and just save yourself some time?
Oh, yeah, you save yourself a few days, I think. Those reloads take forever.
Maybe some people just view that as dirty cheating, whereas this was clean cheating.
Yeah, it's probably one of those kind of things.
Yeah, okay.
The only situations I know of where cheating is actively policed, though, are the Hall of Fame-based games. Either Hall of Fame or the Succession games or Game of the Month series. and all of those banned reloads anyway. So, and I don't know if people want to pull themselves doing an auto load or whatever, but I mean, it's essentially the same thing.
Well, gave us about 30 seconds of amusement at least.
But I think the biggest item for the 3.19 patch, for pretty well any player, is the fact that, hey, you can take your Beyond the Sword CD out of the drive and load the game without a hack, which, of course, if for nothing else, say, multiplayer situations, that's bad. Nothing like being stuck with the mod tag on there and then contributing to more out-of-sync errors. And
apparently somebody also confirmed that you can actually now, you can get tagged directly from the boats now and don't get out of sync every time you do it on multiplayer.
I'm definitely glad to not need the CD in my drive anymore. What I do is I make an image of my discs and then I put my discs away. And if I can't find some kind of a hack that allows me to play without my disc in the drive, I generally don't play that game. There are some that are really good that I will do it anyway. Before I found such a hack for Civ 4, I had to have my CD in my drive because I'm not going to go a day without Civ if I don't have to. But I was definitely glad to see those hacks, and I'm definitely glad that Firaxis decided, hey, it's not really that important to damage your disc.
I think the only understandable gripe from this is when Civilization IV Complete came out not that long ago, I think some people actually went and bought that, even though they already had all of the expansions. They went and got Civ IV Complete because it was DRM-free, and they spent the money on that, and then Firaxis releases a patch after Civ IV Complete came out and after it had been touted as being DRM-free. Some people are like, I just wasted my money.
That's why last episode I said wait for a sale on Steam. Don't spend $40 just for DRM-free. Sheesh.
Well, that does show that people are willing to pay for quality and they're willing to pay for what they want. What they want is to not be restricted to do what they want. And if you allow them to do that, they are willing to pay for it. I believe that's the message being sent here.
I wonder if the timing, I think this was mentioned on the forum somewhere, if the timing for the patch was initially intended to come out more complete, and they just ran into some trouble in terms of making all the updates. I know that even in the current state that we're seeing, 3.19, there's still some issues with it, and maybe they just wound up pushing it back.
Yeah, they could have run into issues in QA, and they already had the CD release scheduled and couldn't change that.
Some other points from this patch. Rolo One, who explained the cheat I mentioned earlier, is definitely sad that players can no longer receive obsolete resources through trade.
Yeah, I felt like that was a cheat every time I did it, but it didn't stop me from doing it. Now I can be stopped doing that, and I'll feel better about myself.
I don't see necessarily what the issue with it is. There's only a few resources that are actually obsolete. For example, ivory obsoletes with industrialism. But, you know, there's still some industrialized countries. Whether or not they should is moot in this case, but they still make use of ivory, so I don't know. There really aren't a lot of them, so it's not too big a deal either way. It'd be interesting that they waited this long to make that change, if they were going to make it.
Oh, re-enabled foreign advisor glance screen. Apparently it's just as ugly as it ever was.
Yep.
Great.
I don't doubt it.
So it returns to scare young children? And
did they ever give a reason for taking that away?
It was scaring young children.
We don't think it's polished enough.
Well, to have someone who likes it. I see some people use it.
I found it very useful.
Yeah, if you know the AI and which ones will declare at which disposition, it can be really useful for that because you can check that really quickly. But it's also good just to see the relative dispositions between the AIs when you're planning out diplomatic victories and such, too. And that could be a real pain when you have that chart line thing going on that they had in 3.17. So you have to click on each AI and look at how they feel about each other, and if they're going to vote for somebody else over you, or it's nice to have glance. You can really see what's going on.
Any extra options are good as far as I'm concerned, even if they do scare small children.
That's a bonus, actually.
Sea patrolling ships no longer attack if they have less than 50% chance of winning the battle. Damn it. Better AI decision-making related to damaged air units?
One of the things I noticed in 3.19 also is that they make them more likely to retreat threatened planes and ships. And I know I've actually been called out in the past on this show for pointing out that the AI tends to garrison the vast majority of its Navy in one city. And I haven't seen in 3.19 if that's still the case or not. But it's still probably something you can take advantage of, because you can destroy that on the first turn of the war almost always. Unless they split the Navy up, you can really still sink the entire thing. I don't know how much that AI change is going to help. It's a step in the right direction.
There are a lot of undocumented changes in this patch, both from the official list as well as what Alex Van Manzarin posted in a follow-up on the CFC thread. Like a couple of things that he mentioned before, I mentioned the one that I think is super big and that everyone should pay attention to, just like the no CD thing, which is documented. But Alex said, hammer decay of build items not currently being worked on correctly scales with game speed. And with the multiplayer community for people who use GameSpy, fixed loophole where you could use a GameSpy emulator to log on as any user.
Ooh.
But I think one of the biggest things that hasn't been documented is you have captured a city.
Yeah.
You now have a third option, which is to look inside the city before you make that decision.
Yeah, and you're forgetting something.
Finally.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Outstanding.
It's like you men go in with blindfolds and walk into a city. Do you want to raise it? I don't know.
You can actually see every building that's in a city on the map by zooming in and looking carefully. This is so much nicer because you don't have to, like, carefully inspect and memorize what everything looks like just to make sure that you're not raising anything you actually want. Especially with some of the wonders, you really want them, but it's hard to tell where they are. The United Nations, and especially Apostolic Palace. And you know that Civ built the Apostolic Palace, but you don't know which city it's in. Unless they built it after you met them in a city that you'd already revealed. And so you're hunting that thing down, and it can be a nightmare. And then, do you want to keep the city or not? Well, I better keep it, because I don't want to raise it, because I want to use it to win. It's so nice that you can look at cities now.
AI player better evaluates the situation before voting for a ban on nuclear weapons.
It means they don't ban nuclear weapons when the only person who has nuclear weapons is me.
Yeah, I was about to say something like that, too. I'm usually the only one who has nukes. And then I will vote to ban nukes if I can so that no one else gets them.
I never ban them. The AI is so bad at using them that it's kind of funny. You can build a nuke and get AIs into wars with other AIs, and then you can fly the nukes there, like just rebase it as if it's a plane, and gift the nukes, and they'll launch it. And they'll take all the diplomatic penalties for doing that.
Oh, I want to try this now.
They'll fire nukes at each other, like negative diplomatic, all over the place. And anybody who's at least or better with their target, they'll get a minus one for every nuke you give them. It's hilarious. You can ruin the world's diplomatic situation without hurting yourself at all just by gifting nukes. It's fun.
Wait for them to patch that one.
Don't patch that. If there's even a next patch.
Well, now there will be, because you just mentioned this fantastically funny exploit.
If from the changelog, now what this means practically speaking, I have yet to see or hear. AI evacuates ships and planes from cities in danger.
Well, I haven't gotten to the point where I would be able to see how it acts in 3.19 yet, but my guess is that it would count cities in danger similar to how it does for, like, when it wicks archers, when you rush it in the early game. Which means that if you're sitting outside a city and you bombard it with your ships and you're attacking it, or you just have units in range that can capture the city, it'll probably move the ships out. But I don't think that's going to stop you if you can basically take it on the same turn you declare. I think the AI would still be vulnerable to that.
A human would be vulnerable to that. There's really not a great deal you can do.
Other than not making it stack all of its ships in one city.
Well, that's true. But you can get caught by surprise by that kind of thing.
Right. Ships have a large enough amount of movement that they can sit well out of visual range, and then you declare your war, you move your ships in and take everybody's cities, and they didn't even have a chance to react.
Yeah, it's very possible.
Terrain height no longer affects aerial recon missions.
Oh, man. I love doing dirigible recons over mountains because I can see all over the place with that. If there was a valley, though, I wouldn't want to scout over a valley because then I probably wouldn't have a very good range. But I don't know. I guess I'm just going to have to live with it, aren't I?
Barrage promotions no longer available to units without the ability to already cause collateral damage. There's one person that feels quite strongly about this change. In the thread, Twan Salem says, I had really hoped if a new patch came out, they'd restore tanks to their former glory. Looks like this isn't the case. Too bad. Looks like I'll keep playing with 3.02.
Okay. If you like running people over with tanks, go you. It's time for you.
Squish.
I applaud your stick-to-itiveness. However, you are missing out on a lot of interesting fixes that have happened in the past year or so of patches. One of my tenets is I try to do something different every game, and if you're doing the same thing every game, yeah, why play it? I mean, just record it once and watch it on video.
Well, like I said, it just might be fun for them to run people over with tanks. It's at the end of the day, it's just got to be what's fun for them. That's why you can mod it. Well, me, and I really wanted that, I'd figure out how to mod tanks to give them collateral again.
Actually be done with an XML tweet. It's not too hard.
I didn't think it is too hard. I just don't know. Frankly, don't care.
Well, that's understandable, too. A lot of people don't find it fun to dig into the XML, for sure. I'm not sure on the balance of tanks, if it's better the way it is now or the way it was.
Tanks were too good before.
Yeah, they kind of were, because you could basically beat anything with tanks just by using the collateral to wear it down and then following up with City Raid or whatever, as long as you had some means of bombardment, even spies.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just crush even more advanced AIs easily. Sure, they have mech infantry or something. But the way it is now, that they can't inflict collateral, there's really no two-move unit that can other than air. The AI is not very good with air. So now it's the opposite. I've got so many games where I just invaded AIs who were so far ahead of me, just infantry, artillery, and some anti-tanks. And without the ability to inflict collateral, those anti-tanks are bad news for the tanks. Because they start with ambush already. And well, you give them combat promotions or something, the tanks have no chance.
Well, if the AI is an idiot, should be punished for that. How many compensations do they need, honestly?
That's true. They do get some pretty ridiculous bonuses sometimes. On all levels, for upgrades, for example.
That's the one that bugs me the most.
I understand the reasoning for it, but it's annoying. They get rifling, and instantly the whole empire is rifles. Oh, come on.
I think that the lesson to be learned is to have a little bit of variety. If you're using exclusively tanks because of their mobility, you're limiting your combat arms. You're not doing the variety. You need to have the variety. You need to slow down your advance. There are times and places where it's certainly acceptable and desirable to do a big rush with all your tanks, but if somebody is prepared against that and you throw your tanks against a well-defended line, well, don't be surprised when you die. You need to wait and bring your artillery up there, soft them up, bring your airplanes up there, soft them up.
I mean, I still think that tanks do have the crushing advantage that they have over civilizations that aren't very advanced, and that's the point of them. They're supposed to utterly annihilate an unadvanced civilization, like stuff that people have rifles or even infantry.
Yeah.
It's supposed to have a significant advantage, and I still think that remains, even without the collateral. So I think their design, or what I see as their design intent, is still there. But this is no change.
AI uses warlords to make super medic units, now in 3.19. Huh.
Yeah.
Not a bad idea.
I thought those were overrated. I liked them a lot at first. But as long as you have any kind of medic, usually the difference between full healing or super medic versus like a medic one stream, it's like a turn or two. Very frequently it's just one turn unless it's something that's damaged really badly. The AI didn't really use any generals too well anyway, so I don't see any problem with this. Like, super medics are better than a lot of things you can do with it. But, you know, in terms of those, I'd rather settle than build military academies now, rather than try to make any super units.
No, I like my great generals. I like my medics. I only have, like, one. I should only need one across the game. But, yeah, I still like to use them. I still think they're good for that. Overrated, perhaps, but I still think they're worth using for that purpose.
The only time I've ever had a warlord is because I accidentally clicked the wrong button. So, in all fairness to the warlords, I think, for me, I could see it for being a last stand situation sort of benefit. I can think of one multiplayer game where that haunted me, so I always keep that in mind.
The city on the hill that Dan took forever to get.
Speaking of undocumented changes, Voice of Unreason quotes, add floodplains to any desert tiles the new river passes through.
I didn't realize they changed that.
Neither did I.
That's in regards to something that was perceived to be a bug, but people weren't sure if it was intended or not. When map scripts are generating cities, starting locations for capitals, one of the things they do to make the site quote-unquote stronger is to add rivers through. And that really is helpful. But when those rivers were crossing desert, like the rivers that were added artificially after the fact for capital beautification, if they ran through desert, they would just leave it desert. So you'd have some interesting freshwater tiles that are still completely useless. And people were hypothesizing, you know, these should be floodplains. It makes sense if these be floodplains. Then people would counter the arguments like, well, in Earth 18 Civs, like the Malanese, they have lots of riverside desert. So maybe it was intended that that be desert. You know, maybe they don't want to make the start too strong. So it's good to see that they took a stance on that with this. Now we're not going to have to deal with those annoying tiles anymore. It'll be much nicer to work with floodplains, for sure.
Yeah, for that one situation that you described there with the Earth 18 map, if that's really what they intended, then you could have it specifically for that. But as a general rule, you don't have to do that to the rest of the game.
I guess you could just make the argument, when is the start balanced versus is it not balanced? And you have some desert there. Well, maybe you should have had desert there, otherwise your land is too good. You could go either way with that. But it's so hard to evaluate whether it starts hard or easy until you start including your neighbors, future resources, and everything. So I think it's just good for completeness.
Yeah. So I think as a term in terms of consistency, I think it's important that they all are floodplains. If a river passes a desert, it's automatically floodplains. Think for seriously reasons. And as to the argument of whether a start is too good or not, there are lots of things imbalanced in civilization. It's an imbalanced game by default. It's like, if it wasn't imbalanced in some ways, it would be pretty boring. Some starts are good, some starts not. It's just the nature of the game. To say that is like going against what the type of game Civ is, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree. I'm actually one of those players who intentionally looks for when people complain about bad starts and tries to play them, so I'm all about variety.
I like getting the most out of my Civ.
Paid a lot of the money for the game, so try different things.
Mind you, I won't reload to get a gold mine thing. In fact, that's one of my rules. I don't like gold mine starts. It's too easy.
Give them to me, then, whenever you get one.
Give them to me in my next multiplayer game.
Or better yet, give me, like, 3 Riverside Gems. I can live with 3 Riverside Gems, too. It doesn't have to be full.
As has already been seen right away, there are a number of things that haven't been documented for one reason or another, and I'm certain some other ones will come up. But seeing as we're recording this, it's only been, 3 days since it was released.
My land is in the safe.
It's already got almost 300 comments.
I have installed it myself. I don't normally install patches right away, but I was just like, oh, okay. I think I've played, maybe about 5 or 6 hours single-player games, and I haven't noticed any change in stability. And just for the record, stability was fine before the 3.19 patch, just to put that into context. I think another thing to note is I have managed to reload several saves, single-player saves, pre-3.19, and no problems.
That's good.
The 3.19 patch is available for Access's website. The installation was seamless. It's a 160 megabyte download.
Yeah, I wasn't going to download it, and then you said, ooh, no DRM? Okay.
All right, so how many people saw this patch coming? Nope.
No.
I never seen it coming.
Last, you know, I'm a huge fan of Civ 4. When can we expect the release of Civ 5? And this is where I read that Sid had said, well, we just wrapped up the Civ 4 series with the release of Civ 4 Colonization, and recently released Civ 4 Complete. We talked about that. Quote, we have always said that if fans want more Civ, we'll keep making more. We'll take your email as another vote for more Civ and let you know if there's any news to report. That answer has gone over. This is fine. But there was something else that Sid said in relation to that that some people were like, what? This is when someone who talked about bringing the Civilization series onto the console, Civilization Revolution, but will the PC line of Civ be continuing? And Cedric's response is, quote, we have a very large and loyal Civ PC community and have always said that we'll keep delivering new Civ games to the community if they keep asking for them, unquote. Okay, kind of consistent with the other answer. Quote, so all of you Civ PC fans out there need to make some noise, unquote.
Do you really want me to do that?
Dave?
Hire out about 50,000 billboards across the country.
We want Civ 5 for PC.
And put up a message that says, please, please design Civ 5 already. We've been waiting long enough.
If they do a Civ 5, I'd really like to work on it. Yay!
Which reminds me that I really like his answer about the guy who was asking if he wanted to go into a career in game design, and he was advising the guy that what you want isn't specifically like computer science or whatever. It's good to have some so you can prototype things, but a well-rounded education is more valuable.
That was interesting.
I do got to say that there are an awful lot of game designers out there and not an awful lot of game programmers out there, and if you can create what it is you're trying to create, you can actually do the programming. You are many steps ahead of the group. Everybody and their uncle can design a game or critique a game or modify a game or whatever, but not very many people can actually go through with writing it all in an understandable way and programming it so that other people can actually play. You know, you have to be able to make a product. That will set you apart.
I think there is a certain thing of game design too, though. There's a lot of, let's be fair, there's a lot of rubbish out there, especially recently.
Not mentioning any names, huh?
No, I don't do that.
Welcome to an interview segment where we hold conversations with key individuals in the Civ community.
You've got quite a video series here about Let's Play Civilization. Them. It's about 3 months ago you started with the Let's Play Civilization 4. Why did we decide to start recording these and narrating them and releasing them on YouTube? What was the push or the pull to do so?
I had two completely unrelated factors that prompted me to finally do the Let's Play. First of all, I follow several other YouTube posters for Let's Play, but they're completely different genres. My favorite two are probably like H.C. Bailey and Jugga Conway. But, you know, they have nothing to do with Civ. But as I was watching, like, hey, I always wanted to do something like this. Not too long after that, it came up in Fit With Our Strategy Tips or General Discussions. Somebody posted a request for a video walkthrough because, you know, if you have the postings, the normal walkthroughs and strategy tip all the time, you can see what people's strategy and everything. But you don't get to see all the micromanagement aspects on a turn-to-turn basis. So somebody wanted to do a video walkthrough. And the first person to respond was actually one of the Deity players, and if he did one, I would definitely be interested to see it myself. But a lot of people voiced concern that it would take too much time. And that's how my name came up, because again, I'm a very fast player. My average game time, usually about 2 to 3 hours. All three of the Let's Play games have actually been under 3 hours, fortunately. Basically, just because I could play at a reasonable level, you know, I'm far from the best player on the forum, far from. I'm pretty good, but there's so many people who are better. It's just to combine that with the speed made it more practical for me to do the videos in the first place than a lot of others. So my name came up, I molded over, and, you know, eventually one night I got bored, downloaded Cam Studio, and started playing around to see if I could get it to work, and ultimately it did.
Okay, that was going to be another one of my questions. More technical question is, what do you use to capture the video? But you've answered that.
Yeah, it's the Cam Studio recorder. It's freeware. You can download it. It's not illegal or anything. Perfectly free. Just grab that and use that. I use the Zoom converter, actually, to switch the videos over to MP4. So nothing, like, too technically difficult or anything. And once I get a little bit more money, have a job or whatever, I'll upgrade my equipment for things like that.
You're not getting paid to play Civ 4? What's up with that?
No, believe it or not, for the first two videos, I was going grad school full-time and working part-time, too. So the balancing, I'm sure.
Yeah.
What's the response been like so far? I've seen some of the YouTube comments in particular, which aren't that many, but I suspect you're getting most of your feedback from, say, CFC.
Well, for the most part, the feedback has been positive. Obviously, my micromanagement has been criticized a little bit, which is perfectly understandable. Actually, in my third video, I put the M in TMIG doesn't stand for micro. It's so hard. You have an extra element of decision-making. Now, not only are you deciding what to build in every city, what to change, what to look at, as this person in war mode or whatever, you also have to think, okay, what am I going to explain to the viewers in the limited amount of time I have per segment? Because, you know, I could just sit there for multiple 10-minute segments without moving a single turn and actually have things to say still. So that's a pretty hard juggling act. So mostly in the comments and even on the thread forward on the forums, the majority of things, again, are still questions about things I didn't explain. And, you know, I do my best, but you can't explain everything. Civ 4, there's so much depth.
Now, if there was something that you had done during the gameplay, maybe this has already come up, that you weren't particularly proud of, would that be excised from the record, so to speak?
I think that depends on the extent. I've been fortunate. The only time that I really got a surprise in the first grade was in the first game where Montezuma declared war on me, even though it was, like, statistically significantly more probable that he declared on one of the other AIs, because they were his worst enemy. Well, that comes down to a horrible, but I better not get into that or it'll be really off topic. I guess if the game was pretty close to being over and there's something I could do to salvage it, I might go back and fix it, but otherwise I'll just take the loss, because for YouTube, you have to limit each of your segments to, well, they say 10 minutes, but technically it has to be less than 11 minutes. So you can get pretty far into the game before it's decided and then realize, oh, I'm going to lose. You know, I would probably still post it, because there's no reason not to. Otherwise, I'd just be deleting the videos, and, you know, that's the point of doing it. Now, one thing I do after every segment, just as a precaution, is save it, because you never know when the system might lock up or, you know, like have a recording problem or something like that. And that's something I actually started doing from the very first video, because I've seen other YouTubers which have problems with that. So, for the most part, no, I wouldn't go back and fix something, unless I thought it would be really useful to the viewer.
Noticed in, for instance, the first edition of The Immortal University, where you use captions. I mean, I realize it's a relatively recent addition to YouTube. How have you found that use, Ben? Are you happy with the results, though, that you've started to do it, at least in some cases? Or
it's actually really easy to do, and I haven't really taken the opportunity to use it to its potential yet. Kind of threw them in there to be funny. Because once you've uploaded the YouTube video, YouTube lets you add the captions after the fact, once it's already uploaded. They'll just watch the video and like, oh, let's just put something here. And you just click on it and type in the caption. There you go, the caption's there. So when I do these in the future, once I get a better machine to be able to do it again, I'll probably use the captions a little bit more, possibly in an explanatory fashion, or, you know, just to screw around like I have been.
And so then, finally, kind of related to that, how important do you find humor to be when you are explaining the game? Because obviously there are times when humor just isn't going to fit or is just not going to be appropriate. But is it a conscious effort to add some humor? Like I'm thinking, for example, of the final number 16 of The Immortal University, where you're looking at the demographics and you're like, oh, look at that. I'm pretty much terrible at everything. That's spectacular. Is that important to you? Is that something you purposely try to do, or is it more incidental?
More incidental. I really like to add more humor throughout the series, but adding in clips isn't really appropriate for a lot of the situations, and it can be a lot of work, too. So there's two negatives for it. And part of the disadvantage there, for me, is the complexity of the game. Like, I'm already deliberately not mentioning things, because I'm mentioning things that are higher priority all the time. So I would love to add some more humor to the series, but it would be at the expense of actually explaining why I'm doing some things in the game. So it's actually a pretty difficult balance, and for most of the segments, it's really hard to add a whole lot of humor, even though I would love to. So most of what you'll see isn't a conscious effort. It's more along the lines of just what I'm thinking at the moment or whatever, and sometimes that can be funny, but you know, sometimes it can be really lame or whatever.
Well, they don't necessarily have to be mutually exclusive. That was so lame.
I guess I could just go to the extreme of being excessively lame.
Unless someone has a question for you about this series, I guess I've just got one more. Will you continue to do these?
I have every intention to. As long as I can get the machine working that will actually do it, I'll probably make some more of them. I know I've gotten some complaints about always winning UN in all three of them, so I might try some different victory conditions.
Space.
Space takes so long, and culture, too.
That's the point.
Well, for the viewers, do they really want to see that? I guess what I'm wondering. Because you have four segments where you're just teching, and very frequently you have the diplomatic situation locked up by then, so it's not even possible to have war declared on you anymore. And you're just out researching them. There's a lot of segments where not a lot's going on.
You might want to cut it down a bit.
That's true. I guess I could keep things out. Like, I could edit things out or whatever. That's a good point. I'll consider that.
Yeah.
In my defense, in the first three games, only one of them was totally peaceful, and that was the Immortal one. And I did not plan that at all. It just happened that way. I usually don't stay peaceful the entire game, but it was just so easy to win that way. I had to do it. But in the other game, I wiped someone completely out. So, well, actually, in the Lonely Hearts Club one, I wiped two people out. And that's probably why R. Rollo mentions that I'm a crazy warmonger in that series.
I guess I find diplomatic a bit of, I don't know, cheap win. Not the AP one, because that's obviously cheap. But the UN one as well, because, like, I just think compared to winning space, it just seems much easier to obtain than the others.
That's something I'll have to argue with. Because winning the UN in the situation that I did it, which was totally peaceful, you really have to know the AI mechanics well. And you can't screw up your diplomatic relations, because once you do, you can't repair them. So you can't win that way anymore. So you have to be really careful the whole game to win UN in a lot of cases. And in the other cases, I had control of the game in the first two games, without a doubt.
To be fair, I haven't watched it. That generally avoid UN win.
Oh, yeah, I'd conquered an entire continent that had two computers on it, and I had like 30 or 40% of the world's population and attack. And at that point, it would just be basically running up the score or whatever.
I suppose it's just delaying the inevitable, going winning another way most of the time.
Might do some cuts for the viewers so they can see how their victory conditions change. And I'll try not to put any of that possible palace cheese up there.
Oh, if you're taking requests on victory conditions, in your next one, go for a time victory and make it interesting. Good luck.
That's painful. I'm never doing that again. I don't know how players can stand it as a backup victory condition. Because to win it on higher difficulties, and really anything over Prince to win time, is very hard. Because basically, you have to get to a position where you can win the game, and then just constantly block the AI from winning and not win yourself. Just deliberately sit on the game. It's kind of boring, to be honest.
Universal mediocrity?
Yeah, pretty much.
I have your solution. Disable all victories except time. You're welcome.
I would try so hard to win Conquest anyway.
Calling today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659.
That's 44-121-288-POLY.
You can Skype us at the Polycast.
Or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast and Revcast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series official website at thepolycast.net.
I'm just saying, you guys sought me out. You said, we need you, Jim. We need you. The show cannot go on without you. Who can keep Malakua tame? Makalua tame? God, I still can't pronounce your name. You need to change that to Malakua.
No. I like it the way it is.
So do I. Here's a clue. Don't say it. Just say Nacky all the time.
Well, that pretty much wraps up this episode of Polycast, episode 71. With you today, we had myself, me and team, Daniel Quick.
Word.
The DS.
You know it.
Makalua.
Hey.
And Peach Fox.
Bye-bye. If I'm ever called back here again, I'll probably do it that time.
Oh, is that how it is? Are you bargaining for another appearance?
No, I'm really not.
To our guest co-host, now that you've guested on the show, would you be willing to come back?
I enjoyed this a lot, so if you guys want me back, I'm game for it.
Excellent.
I had a pretty good time today with you guys, and yeah, I would like to do it again.
Well, we already know Adam. He's already got his date lined up.
Yes.
He's got designs on taking over from you, Dan. Gotta watch him.
I know I'll be hearing from his agent shortly about booking his next appearance, but...
I do that all the time. And I don't even mean in civilization. I just mean day-to-day life. I am the king of the world. And you all need to be starting to bow, okay? Just start doing it. Go ahead.
I'll be going over here now.
Yeah, but that requires you finding a girl and stuff like that first.
No. I've already found my girl. My whatever your name is.
No, not you specific.
You're it.
Oh,
you're
right.
It. You're it.
You might not necessarily do any re-editing just to make us look better. But...
Well, of course he will if he wants us to come back.
Oh, I think he needs the corruption calling more.
Yes, because making you all sound bad is so lucrative.
We can do that ourselves.
Yeah, we don't need any of your help.
Now that you're alive again, what did you want to talk about? Pick a topic. Hurry up.
Wow, Jim is taking charge. Record date June 13th, 2009. Civilization 4, Warlords and Beyond the Sword sound clips, copyright Take 2 Interactive. Copyright 2009, Civilized Communication at civcom.net.